Today, the Colombians who faced bullets and tear gas during weeks of protests and why they won't stop demonstrating.
Las multitudes volvieron a las calles en varias ciudades de Colombia una jornada más. Por octavo día consecutivo, miles marcharon en la
capital. 6 weeks ago, thousands took to the streets in Colombia. Whole neighborhoods were blockaded. The spark was a tax reform. More Colombians would be required to pay income tax, dragging in lower earners and hiking duties on staples like rice and milk. But over the following weeks, as more and more people came out, the reasons for protest changed.
People aren't protesting about milk anymore.
No más pobreza, no señor.
They're protesting about rampant inequality, entrenched inequality. They're protesting about health inequities, protesting about violence.
Policiacos, militares horribles. Igual estamos hablando de unos problemas que llevan años.
I saw one guy dressed as a cow protesting against bullfighting. I've seen people protesting against the destruction of bee environments. There really is no one reason that anyone is protesting.
Es un deber, una obligación de todo colombiano.
Joe Parkin Daniels has been reporting for The Guardian from Colombia as the protests have continued ever since. He's followed, too, the violent reaction to them from the country's police and even from the protesters' fellow citizens. According to rights groups, dozens of Colombians have been killed. All of this harks back to a troubled period of Colombia's history that many hoped had been put behind them. From The Guardian, I'm Rachel Humphreys. Today in Focus, why weeks of protests in Colombia have turned violent. Joe, these protests began back in April as a spontaneous response to the introduction of new taxes. What were they like at the start? Were they peaceful?
They were largely peaceful, absolutely. As is fairly often in Colombia, in the peripheries of the cities, which are the poorest areas, there protesters often block roads, disrupting public transport. In those instances, which happen very early in the morning, that's when the police come in and they break them up with tear gas and protesters fight back, some guys like throwing stones and stuff. And then you have the main kind of mainstream march through the centres of the cities, past all the landmarks, past down the commercial avenues. Those are usually peaceful, again, until they usually get broken up by police.
Y así como lo ven, está convertida en un verdadero campo de batalla. Por más de 5 horas, los manifestantes...
That's something that we saw at the start. The police would move along protesters with tear gas and with flashbangs, and that gets people angry, gets them riled up, and then you have basically a kind of skirmish.
Why did the government want to raise taxes in the first place?
The government wanted to increase taxes, somewhat ironically, to fund coronavirus relief packages in part. Of course, that was badly communicated, and the way they were going to fund the coronavirus relief was by raising taxes in areas that economists say would have hit further the middle and working classes, the very people that the coronavirus relief was aimed at.
How prevalent is COVID in the country right now?
So these protests, of course, come during the context of a brutal third wave of the pandemic.
Buenas noches y bienvenidos a Sala de Prensa. El país afronta quizás los días más difíciles por cuenta del COVID-19.
Daily case rates and daily deaths from COVID-19 are the highest they've ever been. The country is rapidly approaching the very grim milestone of 100,000 deaths from COVID-19. There was, of course, a lot of apprehension about these protests taking place beforehand. Health authorities begged protesters, please do this another way. And the police have also been particularly heavy-handed, and authorities, the politicians that support the police, have been very vocal in saying that the protests must be broken up partly because of the risk of higher contagion of COVID-19.
Los contagios por el virus están rompiendo récords históricos en la pandemia, lo que por supuesto tiene incidencia directa en las unidades de cuidados intensivos.
Okay, so huge numbers of people demonstrating despite COVID. Is there a strong protest movement in Colombia?
So Colombia, like much of Latin America, does have recent form for protesting. These protests really are a continuation of ones that began in late 2019, that came as part of a wave across Latin America, anti-inequality protests, anti-corruption protests.
They've taken to the street with a long list of grievances. Among their many demands, maintaining minimum wages for young people and granting universal rights to a pension to everyone.
The pandemic put a halt to those protests. But those issues, the economic inequality and the police heavy-handedness, which has only got worse during lockdown, has only pulled at the threads of the social fabric in Colombia. It's really a kind of perfect storm, which couldn't really be suppressed any longer by the coronavirus response.
On the 2nd of May, the Colombian president, Iván Duque, announced that the tax rises weren't going ahead.
Le solicito al Congreso de la República el retiro del proyecto radicado por el Ministerio de Hacienda y tramitar de manera urgente un nuevo proyecto.
But the protests continued, didn't they?
They did. And that's really because the protests stopped being about the tax hike almost the moment that people started marching. The tax hike was one policy that drew people. It was the kind of lightning rod that allowed all these trade unions and human rights organizations and various pressure groups to essentially kind of draw on one date and one issue to get people to get turnout out. But some of the reasons people are marching, many of the reasons people are marching, isn't just because of economic disparity or because of any one policy or even any one government. People are talking about endemic problems. So when on the 2nd of May, yes, the tax reform gets yanked, but that doesn't really have any bearing on protesters.
And let's talk about President Iván Duque, the man presiding over all of this. Who is he and what do people think of him?
Iván Duque came to power in 2018.
The headlines on the streets of Bogotá talk of unification and victory. The face of President-elect Iván Duque stares back from every page. But this political unknown faces decades-old challenges.
Before taking office, just a year before taking office, was a relative unknown in Colombian political life. He was seen as someone who essentially rode the support of his mentor, former president and divisive hardliner Álvaro Uribe, to power.
No más divisiones, pensemos en un país con todos y para todos.
Since then, his tenure has been marked with various crises. There was a crisis in Venezuela in early 2019, and then there's been the protests of late 2019, and of course, the pandemic. And he's seen on all of those fronts as having not handled those crises particularly well. He's seen as being out of his depth somewhat, very gaffe-prone. He is largely unpopular.
These demonstrations have now gone on for weeks, and you've been out speaking to people on the streets. Who is out protesting?
People out protesting is just about anyone and everyone. In Bogota, where I am, each Wednesday there's often like kind of focal points and there's marches. So one recent Wednesday, I went to one of the marches starting at the National Park and processing towards the historic Plaza Bolívar, which is the central historic square of the city and the country, really. I met Tata Pedro Velasco. He's a leader of the indigenous Misak people that come from the southwest of the country. He was in traditional dress, which is a kind of long black woolen poncho and a hat. Struck me as many, many indigenous leaders in Colombia do, as someone of incredibly steely resolve, very stoic. He rarely cracked a smile or a frown. He told me he was marching and his community was marching in defense of their ancestral lands.
El gobierno institucionalmente ha tenido incapacidad histórica de atender los problemas de los sectores rurales, pero también
the Misak people have also pulled down a few statues of colonizers And he said very plainly that the colonizers were the people they resisted hundreds of years ago. Now they're having to resist the government, which is essentially what they say, the same system.
A revalorar la historia, a ajustar y depurar la historia oficial.
¿Cómo te llamas?
Elizabeth.
Elizabeth.
Alfonso.
Elizabeth Alfonso.
I met Elizabeth Alfonso in one of the peripheral neighborhoods of Bogota called Portal Americas. It's been redubbed Portal Resistencia, Portal of Resistance. It's where these blockades that I mentioned began, stopping the buses going into the city. And it's where also every night almost police battle with protesters. I met Elizabeth Alfonso ahead of that night's potential daily battle. She was running a soup kitchen, effectively, and she has two children, she told me, two sons, that are actually in these battles with police each night, trying to, as she put it, fight for their rights, fight to make Colombia a more beautiful country.
Para los chicos que están luchando para tener un país que es el que necesitamos hermoso.
Like any mother, was worried because they know that there's a risk that their children that go out and protest, that go out and especially those in the front lines, like battling with police amid helicopters circling overhead, they worry that their children might not come back alive. They don't know that for certain that they will. Yet still, they support the protest and support that they're going.
Nosotros escuchamos a las 4 o 5 de la mañana, nosotros las madres escuchamos los helicópteros y las bombas que envían, y eso es terrible para nosotras porque no sabemos, nuestros hijos nos dicen, madre, nos salimos a luchar y no sabemos si regresan.
You mentioned earlier that the police responded to these protests in a very heavy-handed way right from the start. Has that continued? What have we seen from the police in recent weeks?
What we've seen from the police, in the words of organisations like Human Rights Watch, is systematic and institutionalised violence to disperse protests and to punish those perceived as participating in protests.
Y en Colombia hay al menos 70 heridos, 20 detenidos por varios enfrentamientos entre manifestantes y policías.
According to Temblores, which is a local human rights monitor, 45 people at least killed by police in the protests, 65 protesters with eye injuries, reports of sexual violence, torture, arbitrary detention. And we've seen cases of police using live rounds.
Julio, muy buenas noches. Pues la situación en Colombia de orden público es realmente crítica.
Gosh, that's awful. I mean, the numbers of people who've died. And I wondered, you know, have you had any response from the police about why they're acting in this way? Have they said anything to sort of defend what they're doing?
So the defence that you'll hear from the police and from the Ministry of Defence, which in Colombia almost uniquely oversees the police, is that these protests are no longer peaceful. They point to the 2,000 roadblocks that have been set up around the country, which have shut down both parts of the economy and also humanitarian movement. They look at vandalised bus stations and vandalised property. They look at neighbourhoods blockaded that have been essentially taken over by protesters. When you hear people in authority talk about the police violence, they almost kind of sidestep it as, well, this is how you restore order in a place in chaos.
What has President Duque said about these protests?
So at the start of the protests, Duque said that these protests were just an expression of vandalism and extreme urban terrorism.
El vandalismo extremo y el terrorismo urbano que estamos observando se encuentra financiado y articulada por mafias del narcotráfico.
At various times tried to minimize the reasons behind the protests as being just the result of opportunistic opposition leftist politicians. He has also, especially in interviews with international media, has softened his tone a little and spoken about the legitimate concerns of protesters, about the need for police reform, which protesters on the street that I've spoken to say they just see another night of tear gas, another night of helicopters whirring. They don't see how those words chime with reality.
Okay, so many people have died over the past few weeks, and these protests don't look like they're going to end anytime soon. Where are they happening 6 weeks on from when they began?
These protests continue in all major cities in the country. The epicenter really at the start, and which continues to this day, of the most violent and the most angry protests, is in the city of Cali, which is in the southwest of Colombia.
Nos vamos directamente a Cali, nuestro corresponsal en Colombia, Johan.
It's a major city of about 3 million people, and it's a city that's usually so vibrant. It's the world salsa music capital that brags of being the real city of love and the real 24-hour city.
Silvia, la situación la puedes ver acá detrás de mí. Hay mucha gente. Hemos acompañado esta una.
I went to Cali soon after these protests started. It was very strange to see Cali with all the shops boarded up, all the bars and salsa discos all boarded up. Few people walking around on the street at night. There were huge queues because of the blockades. At this point, there were shortages of petrol.
And despite this, are people in Cali supportive of the protests?
People in Cali aren't united in support of these protests because of the blockades, which have stopped medical supplies moving around at times, which have caused fuel shortages, which have disrupted massively the economy of the city. There are people that protest against the protests. One thing that we've actually seen really disturbingly is this phenomenon of civilians taking up arms and shooting on protesters while the police are doing nothing to intervene.
And did this civilian-on-civilian fighting happen while you were in Cali?
While I was on the plane on the way to Cali, this horrible shooting took place in the very wealthy south of the city as a convoy of protesters, mostly of the Nasser indigenous tribe, were arriving. They were fired upon by shooters in civilian clothing. I met with some of the people that were in that incident. I met with one of the leaders of the community, Giovanni Yule. He told me that this is nothing new. Wealthy interests of Colombia, as he saw them, have always wanted to violently suppress or eradicate indigenous and plural voices.
Did you speak to people who defended the police in Cali, who supported what they were doing?
Absolutely. I went to one of the wealthier neighbourhoods in the west of Cali, where there was actually a kind of procession of riot police and soldiers going along this kind of nice gilded boulevard. A few members of the community had turned up to support them and were cheering on. I met one stationer, a woman who owns a small stationery chain. Her name is Isabel Garcia. And she told me that she was out supporting the police because the city had collapsed effectively.
Porque estamos acá, porque estamos apoyando a la policía, porque no creemos que sea justo.
She said, I understand that the protesters have their rights, but what about our rights too? What about our rights to not be affected by protest?
Ha sufrido más que todo por el vandalismo, por los robos, por la inseguridad.
¿Quién grabó? ¿Él tiene el video? ¿Usted tiene el video?
Are there other reasons why the violence has flared more in Cali than perhaps in other parts of the country?
There's a racial element. Cali is a city with a large Afro-Colombian and indigenous population. The fault lines have really been widened. Cali also sits on the road just 2 hours away from Buenaventura, which is the major Pacific seaport, which was blockaded on day one of the protests and has been partially blockaded since to essentially shut down a large part of Colombia's import-export operations. As a result, the police response has been particularly strong to break down those blockades. Cali is also hugely unequal. Cali also has a history of micro gangs, of micro traffickers, which again means that the police response has to be stronger they say, because they are not dealing with protesters only with rocks and clubs and batons and whatever, but they're dealing with protesters that have guns.
What does this mean that day-to-day life is like in Cali for people there right now?
The government has managed to lift a lot of the blockades, or at least lift them for enough time that supplies will be getting in. The fuel shortages we saw a month ago, we're not seeing so much. Shortages of food and medical supplies, we're also not seeing. While there is some order in Cali, a semblance of pre-protest life, it's very much still under that nasty cloud of tension.
You've told us that people in Colombia are protesting for a huge range of reasons. These demonstrations have moved far, far beyond the initial tax hike. So what is underpinning all of this, do you think, Joe?
What's underpinning these protests is essentially a howl of outrage over endemic inequalities. Colombia has long been unequal, has long been ruled by a perceived political elite. And when I say long been, I don't mean in recent memory, I mean since independence and before. Rebel groups, most prominently the FARC, the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia, took up arms in the 60s against the government to bring better rights to the countryside, better rural development, so that people that work the land could maybe one day own it. They obviously, as time went on, turned to the drug trade and to kidnapping. But the point still stands. An armed conflict was born out of such inequality.
After more than five decades of bloodshed, there may be a chance for peace in Colombia again. The Colombian government and the Marxist guerrillas known as FARC are due to sign a revised peace deal Thursday to end the conflict that has killed more than 200,000 people and forced millions more Colombians from their homes.
The FARC actually demobilized in 2016 following a peace deal.
En nombre de las FARC, ofrezco sinceramente perdón a todas las víctimas del conflicto.
That peace process was supposed to end this violence that had left 260,000 dead and displaced 7 million. But more than that, it was supposed to resolve these intractable social divides. We're seeing now that didn't succeed.
What does inequality mean, though, for people living in Colombia? Like, how does that manifest in their lives?
Inequality is so baked into society. People have completely kind of institutionalized it almost. So in Colombia, they actually have neighborhoods divided into what are called stratas, ranging from 1 to 6, based on that neighborhood's perceived income. And utility bills are fixed to that price. And what that strata system means in reality is that people are organized into castes. People feel they are persecuted in job applications because of the neighborhood that they've listed as being from. Really, for people in poorer neighborhoods, they feel the only way that they can get out of poverty is by getting out of their neighborhoods.
And how has the pandemic played into all of this?
Well, the pandemic has made the poorest poorer and sicker, has pushed 2.8 million more people into extreme poverty.
El reporte de 577 muertes hoy.
During these protests, Colombia's been hit by a third wave of the virus.
Las clínicas hospitales están colapsando por no poder.
In the context of collapsed hospitals, of ICU beds being completely unavailable. In Bogota, if you need an ICU bed, you have to wait till someone gets better or, which is sadly most likely, dies. We're talking about a public health calamity right now.
Coming up, can the Colombian government find a way to bring these protests to a peaceful conclusion? Joe, what do protesters want from Iván Duque? And is he likely to give in to them?
The range of demands from protesters is so wide that there's some that he wouldn't even entertain. Some people calling for his resignation, some calling for a new constitution. Again, that seems unlikely. But things like police reform, I mean, he has already made some very kind of soft promises towards reforming police. The most concrete thing we've actually seen is that he'll change their uniforms from the militaristic green to the more civically acceptable blue.
Oh, wow. I'm sure that would make a big difference to how they'd behave.
Absolutely. The problem is that While the police response continues to be violent and while protesters continue to blockade, the two sides also have their own social bases, which are becoming ever more hardline. So he has less political capital to reach an agreement. And really, as do the leaders of the protest, what nebulous leadership there is.
Joe, what you've described happening in places like Cali at the moment sounds horrifying. And this is happening in a country that has a long history of conflict. The government was at war with the leftist FARC movement for more than 50 years. Is Colombia a country still struggling to resolve its issues peacefully?
Absolutely. Colombia is a country that tragically still has not figured out how to resolve social problems peacefully and democratically. It's a country that so often falls almost lazily, sleepwalking into violence. The facts on the ground remain that the countryside is a dangerous place for activists, for environmental and human rights defenders. In Bogota, the political space that was supposed to open with the inclusion of the FARC into politics was supposed to open a political space, a civil space for the left. But we've seen as we've seen in these protests, as soon as people start marching, immediately they are cast as being somehow infiltrated by guerrilla movements. And of course, Colombia's conflict, fought largely against the FARC, was not only fought against the FARC. There were right-wing paramilitaries, and those right-wing paramilitaries, they would carry out some of the worst human rights abuses that happened during the conflict. And so right now, when we see civilians or people in civilian clothing shooting alongside police towards protesters, well, that really does conjure something very ugly.
Do you see any way that this might be resolved peacefully?
I think these protests could be resolved peacefully, but that would require an incredible amount of political will on either side of the protests, with some de-escalation on both sides. Some sort of agreement could be reached with a cessation of hostilities, with weeks on end without hearing news of a protester killed. I think tensions could be calmed. For the social fault lines, for these cracks to be narrowed, I think that would require a concerted effort implementing policies that affect not just those in the cities, but those in the countryside. That is a very much a process that would take years and years and years.
Joe, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
That was Joe Parkin-Daniels. Read his reporting from the protests in Colombia and see photos of some of those you heard in this episode at theguardian.com. Before we go, I have some very exciting news. Today, The Guardian is launching a brilliant new interview podcast. It's called Comfort Eating, and it's hosted by our very own restaurant critic, Grace Dent. In each episode, she'll be joined by a famous guest who will share their favourite comfort foods with her and some surprising, often hilarious insights into their lives. I've had a sneak listen to the first episode, and it's very entertaining. Find it wherever you get your podcasts. That's it for today. This episode was produced by Sammy Kent. Sound design was by Axel Cacoutier. The executive producers are Phil Maynard and Archie Bland. We'll be back tomorrow.